Good morning. I'm calling the Senate Education Committee to order at 8 a.m. And today we have present Senator Stevens, Senator Geisel, Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Hughes. Like to remind everyone their cell phone etiquette, please silence them. Thank you for those assisting us today. Today we'll have two confirmation hearings. First, we'll have Karen Perdue, who is a new appointee for the University of Alaska Board of Regents. And I'll pause for a moment to welcome Senator Coghill.
Good morning.
And Karen and I had the opportunity to chat yesterday, so I look forward to this hearing today. She's from Fairbanks, but is here in person. Thank you for that. And so if you want to go ahead and approach the table, and following Ms. Perdue will be Maureen Van Wagner with the Professional Teaching Practice Commission, who is being reappointed from her original 2014 appointment and will be calling in from Anchorage. So, Karen, I think you know the drill here. Introduce yourself and proceed. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Board of Regents.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Perdue, and I reside in Fairbanks, Alaska. Proudly reside in Fairbanks, Alaska. Lifelong Alaskan, spent my childhood growing up in the interior, and went to college in Washington, D.C., and then returned and lived in Juneau for about 20 years, serving in state government. And all during that time, traveled all over the state of Alaska. Such an honor to be able to do that, from Ketchikan to Point Hope and everywhere in between. So I retired in 2014 from going to the office every day. And so I thought, well, how can I serve the state? Have been doing a lot of volunteer work since that time. But I wanted to just give you a few things that are relevant to my qualifications for the Board of Regents, if you wouldn't mind. I started my work career with a great teacher, Senator Ted Stevens. I worked for him in his office in D.C. as a press secretary and a policy aide, and how I came to do that was that I worked in the News Miner as a young person, as a reporter, and C.W. Snedden was the publisher of the paper at that time, and he was a dear friend of Ted Stevens. So I was able to move into that role, and it had a great impact on me in terms of my commitment to public service. When I returned to Alaska from D.C., I actually started here in Juneau with Lieutenant Governor Terry Miller, who was also a great mentor. And I ended up serving under four governors, culminating in my role as Commissioner of Health and Social Services for about 8 years under Tony Knowles. Oil was $9 a barrel at that time, middle of my first term. Sense of impeccable timing, as many of you have had. But needless to say, you learn a tremendous amount during those times about how to motivate people who have a heart and a mission for an agency, even under financial difficulties. And so I think it was a great learning experience for me about leading in times of hardship. I had the opportunity then to return to Fairbanks in 2001 to serve under Mark Hamilton as the Associate Vice President for Health Programs, where I worked to develop some innovative academic programs with the faculty. I was involved at that time. I pretty much worked with every campus and leadership across the MAUs, and culminated my work along with hundreds of other people in a statewide academic health plan for the University of Alaska. I think the broadest academic plan that has been adopted by the university. I learned the importance of the university to the state's economy and to employers, and I learned that I came to truly enjoy working with faculty. But I also, probably more importantly, learned to appreciate that that the university must meet the students' needs to attract and retain them. Higher education is increasingly competitive, and students have options. Even in Alaska, they have options online and in a variety of ways. And they are very skilled consumers, and they expect legitimate expectations for ease of use of the system, for course sequencing so they can move through and not waste money, and for very high quality. So the students are really the people that keep us honest and keep us motivated to try to improve the system. I've worked in large institutional systems with a lot of missions, but probably as importantly, I've served on some boards of directors. I served on the Denali Commission and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And also, probably importantly, I served as the director of a board, the State Hospital Nursing Home Board, where the CEOs, that was a 36-member board composed of CEOs. And you tend to learn the difference between management and governance in both of those cases, and I think I have some of those memories burned into me. And then also, for 10 years, I represented the United States in the International Arctic Council Forum in the Human Dimension. So the Board of Regents is one of the few boards that's listed in the Constitution, and the framers of our state, I think, intended the board to be a powerful oversight to a one-state university. That's what the Constitution states, a one-state university, and to do two things well, guide the policy of the university and to hire the president. So I think that's relevant in the sense that in tandem, the board and the president would work together to administer a system that is now comprised of 30,000 students and $850 million. And it's no secret that the university is facing severe financial pressures and declining enrollment, which as I think is equally concerning. The regents and the president, I think, will be making tough decisions and have made some tough decisions over the next several years. To responsibly manage that situation. And in all of this, I believe that we need to continue to send a signal to our students that we will provide a quality academic experience and conduct world-class research, even in times of financial difficulty. Because if the institution loses the confidence of the students or the public or the faculty, we will see continued declining enrollment. And a lot of people have asked me why I wanted to sign up. I was happy in retirement, and why would I want to sign up for this assignment? I would just say that our university is going to be celebrating its 100th year, and I think the Wickersham, Judge Wickersham, and the founders would be thrilled and delighted with the system that we have built. But I would like to participate during this critical time in guiding our university so that we have it for at least another 100 years, if not more. And finally, my three children graduated from the University of Alaska. Well, that's not actually true. My youngest child is going to graduate, he says, in the spring. And my oldest grandson has started at UAS. So the university is a part of our life as well. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions for Karen Perdue? Senator Stevens.
Well, we can't let her go without a question. Certainly, I don't know anybody who's more qualified to be on the Board of Regents, and thank you for all of your years of service. How do you work with a reduced budget? What is the responsibility of the Regents? We know there's administration, a president has a responsibility, but what is the responsibility of the Regents in dealing with a reduction in revenue?
I think the regents have a couple of jobs in that regard. One is to set guidelines, values and guidelines for the president and the leadership of the chancellors in looking at budget reductions, to hear from the president through a vetted process that he's done on his ideas and vote and discuss and vote on those. In other words, the board's job is not to come up with the ideas themselves, but to really set the framework for the administration and the timelines for the administration to come to the board. And the board also has the responsibility to listen to the public and to the key stakeholders, the students, the faculty, parents, others, you know, on the impact of decisions and in a way that is in cooperation with the president, but is not the same as the president. So I've attended one meeting already, and Chair O'Neill is doing a very good job. We listen to faculty governance. We listen to the student leadership. And those outlets are really important, especially when you're making tough decisions.
Thank you, Karen. So there's a chance you may be able to present your son with his diploma.
I think that might be a possibility. Let's hope.
Anyone else have a question? I have a question. Oh, go ahead,
no,
Senator Coghill.
You. No, go ahead.
No, thank you. You mentioned declining enrollment, and what do you attribute that to? I know the tuition has gone up lately. Is that impacted, or why is the enrollment gone down?
Yeah, I wish I had a very informed answer. I would like to delve into that. My understanding is, to some degree, there are some demographic issues. There are less high school graduates, but also, what's our out-migration? That's one question I would have. The other question would be, my understanding is in times of recession or flat job growth that university enrollment, post-secondary enrollment grows. And so I'm wondering why we haven't seen that, or perhaps we're not to that point in our economy. Maybe, so looking at the various communities where the enrollment's declining, the ages of those people who are not coming to us, I think would be an important thing for me to know.
Okay, thank you. Senator Coghill.
Karen, thanks for being willing to do this, and I agree with Gary on qualifications. There's probably a dozen questions I'd like to ask you. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to visit with you. The university has quite a family of campuses, and the president is trying to marshal them in a better unison. So that's going to be a challenge, aligning both qualifications, curricula. Is that something that you've been alert to? Is that something you've been watching?
Can you just give me a little more?
Sure.
Guidance?
We have. I'll give you probably one that you're more aware of is nursing programs. We have nursing programs in two of the campuses, but they're not totally aligned time-wise, and in their certifications. So I know that's. Something that wants to be fixed, but I don't know how to fix it. And is that something you've been alert to?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, here's what I am aware of, that the nursing program is a single accredited program, strong program at UAA, with consistent programs delivered in, I think, 16 sites, the two-year program. One of the problems the students have had is the common calendar has not been the same. So until recently. So the libraries would be closed at UAF when UAA was, when UAA was having classes. There were a lot of logistical business processes that weren't cleared up for the students. As far as course transfers for admission, I think that has, my understanding is that that has gotten a lot better. I would imagine if it hasn't, that we will continue to hear from the public and from parents and students. But I have been told by leadership that the three MAUs have the faculty have aligned a lot of their journal ed requirements.
I know that's a work in progress. I just wanted to find out your alertness to it. Actually, I think the president had been before this committee, and he's talking about a couple of things that I would probably bring up. He's looking for any way he can get endowment money, if there's any way that he can bring other money into university. And on the federal level, we're working trying to get the land grant issues. Those are all probably works in progress. But from your perspective, is there things that we could do better to reach out to economic communities for the benefit of the university?
I think the tax credit does help certain businesses participate in supporting the university, either on a specific academic or research focus or generally. And that, I know, is being re-examined, and I hope it can continue to be in the mix. When I worked with industry, in the health field, they were willing to contribute to the program, and pretty much in a block grant kind of way, as long as they could see the results were, someone reported back to them that there were results, students were graduating, or the faculty were in place to do the work. So I think that process needs to continue. Again, not in a way that industry gets to control the academic program, but does support the fact that graduates are going to be there for them to employ.
Senator Cochran.
Thanks for letting me have a dialogue with her. I really appreciate your willingness to step up. One of the things that we've talked about here is, just like you mentioned in your testimony, we have to compete with other universities. That means we probably have to be a little more nimble in some areas, and we have to attract our students. And probably the president is talking about working better with K-12 in Alaska, because we just have a disconnect that is happening between both our university system. And the struggle is our university system is partly a community college and partly a accredited university for your degree program. And those are tough to figure out. Have you been watching the president's initiative on trying to work with the K-12 system?
I have read some materials, and I got a briefing from UAA about the middle college work that they're doing. And if a student can walk out of high school with more than advanced placement, actual college credits, you know, that's huge, and also a great relationship that's built with the University of Alaska. I'm sure the financing is an issue that has to get through, but it seems like it has been done in places in the state with great success.
Madam Chair, I'll reserve some questions for later, but I really appreciate her willing to step up.
And Senator Gisel, I'm going to go to you in a minute, but just on that last point, Ms. Perdue, there is a misalignment, I think, between the K-12 curriculum and the university, perhaps because we have students that are graduating with pretty decent grade point averages, but they're still needing remedial coursework. And so I'm not sure if that's you were referring to that, but I believe that there needs to be coordination with the department, so that our students, as they come out with degrees, they're ready to jump into the 100 level classes. So that would be a good thing to keep an eye on and work on as a member of the board. Senator Gisel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And keeping with that same theme, of course, the idea of having that middle college and kids graduating from high school with college credits, bravo. My concern is, are those college-earned credits in high school at a lower standard, since we know kids are graduating with great GPAs and still needing remedial work. So wanting to verify the authenticity of high school-earned college credits, I think that's something the regents should be concerned about. I also hear loudly from parents about the credit transfer between the campuses.
Okay.
Huge. And these are parents paying for their kids' education. It's got to be fixed. President Johnson has been working on reductions, and the media has amplified the voice of faculty. The number of faculty is questionable. I don't know. But the media has certainly amplified the message from the from the faculty that they don't support what he's doing. How do you reconcile that? You said you like to listen to faculty and students, but there's got to be a balance somewhere, and you're responsible for that, I think.
Right. A tough question. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Gisel. I guess as a board member, we need to hear from the Faculty Senate that as they formally come to the board. We need to hear from the student government as they formally come to the board and get their unified input. And we have done that in the first meeting I attended, and renewed our efforts to try to set aside time on each agenda for a significant amount of time to do that, so that we have a you know, we have a structure in our system for that work to be done. That's probably one of the most efficient ways. In addition, the president has beefed up his on-campus meetings significantly. So hopefully that will also be of effect. But, you know, overall, it's a tough time. It's hard to move. It's hard to cut, as you well know. So the president is created a structure. There are some criticism of the structure. He's improved the structure. Faculty governance has told us that at the last meeting, that the strategic pathways structure is getting better. You know, so it's not a perfect process, but it's just tough.
Thank you. Yes, follow up, please, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. You also talked about being the commissioner during $9 a barrel oil. That's essentially where we were last year when you consider inflation at $20 a barrel. So the support of the president and the regents in really making those adult decisions is important. You know, you talked about the tax credits and how to bring in more revenue to the university and separating from, I'm going to call it state subsidy of the university. You know, one of the things that is concerning is that per student, the state subsidizes the university at about $20,000 a student, actually more than that. The next closest state is about $9 a student. And I think most of that is reflected in the sports programs, in that our boosters and alumni are not actually supporting those athletic programs as they do in other universities. Where do you see opportunity there?
Madam Chair, Senator Giesel, I don't have enough information yet on that issue. I apologize. You know, some campuses don't have athletics, right? So some do and some don't. And I live in Fairbanks. It's a hockey town. I understand the connection between the town and Gown. I would need to have a lot more information before I gave you an informed answer.
Well, I appreciate that. It is probably getting into the nuances of the budget and funding. So just something to keep in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I may have misheard, the Secretary would probably know, but I think you might have said the next closest state was $9 instead of $9,000.
Thank you.
So I just thought
thank
we
so
might
much
want to get that corrected.
That would be something, wouldn't it?
Senator Beckage.
I just have maybe three questions.
Proceed.
The first question, you know, we talked just briefly, Senator Coghill mentioned teaching and the idea, and as did Senator Chair Hughes. When we had our meeting, and I should put on the record that Karen Perdue was a mentor of mine and hired me to my position as community justice coordinator in the department. So,
wow,
I might have a little bias here. But tech teachers, you know, we've been talking in committee about the importance of technology, and how would you envision maybe adjustments to how we train teachers in Alaska through the university? I recognize that's getting into the weeds, as Senator Giesel said, to some degree, but is there a role for the Board of Regents in helping define, you know, that how we educate our teachers so that we're sure that we're educating teachers for the next, for this century and beyond?
Minister, Senator Begich, I think that process of reporting to the board through the Academic and Student Affairs Committee would help us understand how we're going to address how our academic programs are going to address rural teachers, teacher retention, because if there's a hole in the bucket, if you are doing a great job generating supply, but the teachers aren't staying in their roles, you know, the academy needs to really look at how that can occur. And I know the university has actually adopted a teacher mentor program for new teachers. That's been helpful. I just think our role would be to challenge the school of education, the schools of education, to address the issues that the data show, that we don't have Alaska-trained teachers for the most part in our teaching positions. We don't pretend to retain them in our rural districts. And what can we do to adjust that? I'm not sure I've answered your question, Senator Begich, but I'm...
It was a bit more
Senator
detailed.
Yeah. Oh,
sorry, Madam Chair, if I can follow up.
Go ahead.
It was perhaps a bit more detailed. Let me pull back up to 30,000 feet here. You know, you mentioned the Constitution requires us to have one university here. How do you perceive the constitutional obligation of having university? I mean, what is your sense of what that fairly vague section of the Constitution means to the state? What is the constitutional imperative for a university?
Well, I think that the university was meant to be a portion of the state's economy. It was meant to serve the people across the state. And one thing about many of the jobs that we educate for is that they're in many of our smaller and larger communities. Healthcare is an example. Teaching is another example. And one of the things that I strongly believe in is that we need to look at students as place committed as opposed to place bound. If we view a student as place committed, in other words, I want to live in my community and I want to contribute through my education to my community, we should try to make that happen for the student if the quality can be met. And that's where we get to distance delivery. That's where we get to making different parameters than concrete buildings with classrooms and limited schedules. So for working students, for people who cannot take their whole family and move to Anchorage. So the place commitment is a fundamental concept to me in a state university. And that's different than a private university who might fill a niche role in certain expertise or certain community. We really have a broader responsibility. That is pretty high level, but...
Senator Begich?
That is high level, which is what I was looking for. You know, we talk about, within that framework you've laid out, you mentioned it's hard to cut. President Johnson appeared before us and laid out a $325 million budget based on a lot of private funding as well in the long run. You described for us a slope down to get us there. We're not doing that. The Senate, has recommended cuts of another $16 million on top of the governor's cuts. How do we meet that mission and that vision of a broad, you just call it a place committed university, in an atmosphere of cuts? What are some of the things that you're going to be looking for to help us meet that?
Madam Chair, Senator Begich, the Strategic Pathways Administrative Functions work, I have heard feedback that has been an effective tool for looking at the business processes of the university and trying to make sure there's efficiency and also consumer satisfaction, because, again, consumer satisfaction relates to enrollment. In relation to academic programs, athletics, these other areas, I don't have a magic answer at this moment. I think we have to challenge our chancellors, we have to challenge our faculty, and with the awareness of the environment we're in, which is historic, historic in its severity, I think it's probably worse than when $9 barrel oil was when I was serving. It is worse. So I really can't give you, I'm sorry, a magic answer, but I do know it's the job in front of us.
There's the magic.
Thank you. And I have one. Did anyone have any other questions? Senator Stevens.
And yes or no question, really.
Okay.
Have you ever taken a distance education class? If yes, was it successful? If no, would you plan on taking one?
The answer is no, but I taught one.
So you know how difficult it can be.
Madam Chair, Senator Stevens, actually, it was a three-hour graduate-level class, and it was a challenge. But what I really found is that some students are extremely comfortable with the distance environment. They find it more comforting to participate, it does challenge the instructor tremendously. But also, if we invest in training for instructors, it's also very rewarding for them.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll just have a comment, and you can respond if you'd like. you know, Matt Hsu had been desirous for decades to have someone on the Board of Regents, and finally Dr. Paramo, now Dr. Bishop, was appointed, and now she has moved out of Matt Hsu, as you know. So when we chatted yesterday, of course, you have connections in Matt Hsu, and we talked about that particular campus. We've hit the 100,000 point in our population, and that campus has really changed. When I took classes there when I was a young mother, I finished up my degree late. I was the black sheep, I think, among my siblings, where I got married instead of going to college initially. But when I went there, it was working. It was older folks, 30, 40, 50s, and people that were working. And now when we go on that campus, it is, 19-year-olds, 22-year-olds, and you see the kids sitting in the hallways with their backpacks and their guitars. It's just a different atmosphere and just a very thriving university. And Talis Kohlberg is doing a very good job there. So I just ask that since we did lose Dr. Paramo, that you just keep Matt, our area in mind. I think there's a lot of potential there down the road when we get our state back on her feet. There's a good deal of land there, and there's a lot of interest. It's near the agricultural lands there, the experimental station, as well as the hospital. So there's just great potential there, a lot of acreage. And maybe down the road someday it might make sense to expand and have more opportunities there. I just we understand that there are students that are actually coming out from Eagle River, too, rather than going in towards Anchorage. So we actually serve more than just the 100,000 out our way. So just want you to keep that in mind. And do you have any closing comments before we move on?
Thank you. No, thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you. We do. I do agree with Senator Stevens. I don't know that we could find anyone higher qualified than you. And we appreciate your coming today. And we will move on. Thank you very much. Next, we have Maureen. Let's see. I want to get her name correct on here. Maureen Van Wagner, who is been reappointed to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. So, Maureen, I don't know if you can hear me, but if you can, state your name for the record and tell us a little bit about yourself. And actually, I think a good a little review of what the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, what their role is, and what they work on would be helpful to us as well. Maureen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Madam Chair Hughes. I appreciate this opportunity to be here today. For the record, my name is Maureen Van Wagner, and I am a special education teacher in Anchorage, Alaska. I teach at East High School and have been an educator for 21 years, 12 of which have been at East. I have served as your teacher representative for the professional teaching practices for the last 3 years, and it'll be my pleasure to continue to serve. In regards to what the professional teaching practices does, you know, when I first got appointed, I remember thinking, wow, this is an amazing opportunity to be part of a process where we actually get to talk about education policy, things that are happening within my field. I knew that part of what I would be doing is reviewing sanctions that the director would bring our way, and that is a very daunting task, being in a position where I possibly will be issuing a sanction of a warning, a reprimand, a revocation, a suspension of a certificate isn't something I take lightly, and that is what we do. That's in the purview of our job on the PTPC as we take those recommendations from our director, who is Jim Seitz at this time. And currently what we've been working on, as we did open up the Code of Ethics, I think that's something that most of you are aware of. It's been almost 18-month process of looking at strengthening the language that we have in there for teachers. So there's an understanding of what needs to be done as an educator and the high expectation that is placed on an educator, whether you're at the college level, high school level, elementary, middle school, and so forth. So what I do on the PTPC, I appreciate, and I'm glad that I get the opportunity to spend another 3 years doing that, think it's important to have that historical knowledge on the commission.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Maureen? Senator Coghill.
First of all, Maureen, thank you for being willing to do this particular work. One of the things that we have struggled with is keeping teachers in Alaska. And from your perspective, now that you've had to deal with them both at sanction level and qualification level, how do you see that we could do better from your perspective?
Oh, that's a loaded question, Senator Coghill. I received my education training in at Eastern University, as you can tell from my resume. I feel like I had a really quality training, and I think as a part of that training, one of the things that I appreciated from my professors was knowing what I was getting into, knowing that the profession I was going into required me to have high standards for myself as an educator and the standards that I set for in the classroom. I spent the first part of my career teaching in New Jersey. That is my home state. Moved into Alaska in 2005. And I'm a mentor for our school district, and I'm also an instructional coach. And so I work with teachers that are beginning teachers, and I also work with teachers that are on plans of improvement for various reasons. The people that come before me have definitely made some choices that I don't always understand as a teacher. I try to pride myself on making good choices for myself and my students. And I think a lot of what it has to do is that teachers, educators, principals, superintendents, because that's in our purview to issue sanctions, need to really understand the code of ethics that they are signing. Because you're signing it. When you're online and you're doing that application, you're checking, yeah, I understand this. Even in our teacher trainings in the beginning of the school year, we take time at East High. It's handed out to all the teachers. We review them. I just don't know that there's an understanding of what actually is expected, and I think that's where some of the gray areas come in. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maureen, that was pretty much what I was trying to get at. And then because classroom management is such a big deal, and society dishes up just about everything it can to a classroom, I think our teachers have some of the most challenging circumstances probably given to them. And as you look at them, I know that, like you say, some will probably make poor choices, but it's also true they're sometimes put in some pretty difficult circumstances. So I appreciate your willingness to work with them.
Thank you.
Senator Begich?
I also wanted to thank you for choosing to serve again. I don't know if you're familiar with what I'm about to read. It comes from, may I read from the Senate Finance Subcommittee on Education? Mm-hmm. We had a recommendation that came out of the Senate Finance Subcommittee on the Department of Education related to the commission. And I just wanted to read it to you and see if you could give me some comment on what the impact might be of it, or if you're even familiar with it. Either way, I'm just looking for some feedback. This was recommendation of language number 3 from the report, and it said the Senate Finance Subcommittee recommends that the 2016 performance review of the Department of Education early development finding related to objective number 9 in that report be pursued. That recommendation suggests consolidating the work of the Professional Teaching Practices Commission into the work of the Office of Teacher Certification. Quote, DEED could consolidate offices for cost reductions. The review team recommends that DEED eliminate duplication of work processes between the PTPC, University Teacher Preparation Programs, and DEED, and that the legislature amend AS Title 14, Chapter 20, Article 5, Professional Teaching Practices Act, to consolidate the PTPC's work into the Teacher Certification Office's work. And my question is really about that last piece. If we consolidate the PTPC's work with the Teacher Certification Office's work, would that have, would just from your experience on the commission, what could we expect from that? Would we still see the same level of service, or does that recommendation make sense, or does it not make sense to you as a commissioner?
I thank you for that question. I appreciate that. It is something, as a commission, we did talk about. We did see the performance review. I can speak for myself, and I can speak on behalf of the existing commission. That is something that we personally, as a commission, don't feel would be advantageous to combine those two offices. You have certification, and then you have the PTPC, which is, in my opinion, is a complete opposite of what is going on in certification. Certification is issuing certification to the teacher. PTPC is possibly revoking that certificate. I feel like it could muddy the waters. I feel like what we do as a team in our sessions, whether an executive session or not an executive session, is an opportunity for all of those representatives. So you have four teacher positions, you have a superintendent, you have a university representative, and I feel that that knowledge altogether allows for us to make a really good decision based on all different aspects of the educator field. Personally, I feel that adding that on to teacher certification, when our certification office already has a difficult enough time getting certifications out, and this is just my opinion, in a timely manner, this would add more work to the certification office. And I feel that the PTPC as it exists now serves the community best as it functions currently.
Thank you very much for that answer. Thank you, Madam.
You're welcome.
There are the questions. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maureen, thank you for serving on this. It's, I'm sure you mentioned the concept of suspending or revoking a certificate as a very weighty responsibility, and I sure appreciate that. How many sanctions, suspensions, or revocations have you, I hate to say participated in, but have you seen executed during your time on this commission?
Thank you for that question. I would like to say I have that number in my mind, but I don't keep a record of that personally. I as well could go to the DEED website, and you could look at the last few years to see what's been issued. The only things, warnings aren't reported on the website. I personally would say, if I had a guess, this is 3 years, we meet three times a year, there's probably anywhere from 4 to 5 cases that get presented to us each time. This last particular time, we just had a few, and they mostly go between warnings and suspensions. I can't recall how many revocations, maybe 1 or 2, but not very many. So sorry, I don't have exacts, but
that's fine.
That happens when we're in those meetings, and like you said, it's a weighty task, and I'm grateful that I get to participate in it.
Well, look, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Maureen. That's a good ballpark. Gives me a sense. Thank you. So a second question is, do you know how the actions of the commission affect teacher retention? So let's say that there have been, you've issued some sanctions, some suspensions. Do you ever follow up to see if that teacher is then retained or is let go?
That's something that wouldn't be, at least in my purview. DIM sites may follow up with those things, and that would be a question to ask the director. I don't think it's something I've ever thought about, and as you're asking it now, I'm thinking, that is a good question. I don't know that it off the cuff, my personal opinion would say that I don't know that it actually affects teacher retention. Was there close to 13,000 educators, 17,000 in the school in Alaska? Certainly we're not having maybe a fraction of that, what we see before us. It can feel weighty at times. It can feel like, wow, we've got 6 cases for us. This is crazy. But when you think of how many people fall under the purview of a certificate, I think it's a very minimal amount. I don't think that giving sanctions to teacher affects, this is my opinion, teacher retention, at least how I see it. Now, the rest of the commission might have a different answer, and Jim Sykes, who's the director, might actually have that data. I don't have that data.
Madam Chair,
Senator Giesel.
And actually, Maureen, my question was more relevant to that specific educator for whom the disciplinary action was taken.
I misunderstood. I apologize. Okay, for the particular educator, you mean whether they're retained? Well, if they get a sanction, depending on what the sanction is, if it's a warning, then they're not getting anything taken away. It'd be up to the district as to whether or not they maintained that teacher if they were tenured versus not tenured. And after that, I mean, if they're being suspended, well, they're not maintaining their position. And are you wondering if they're rehired back? Is that the question?
That was fundamentally the question. And, of course, okay. if they are tenured, you know, does that mean they're in for life regardless of the action of your commission?
I think it depends on each district. I can only speak for my district. I've been here for 12 years in the Anchorage School District, and I've seen teachers be asked to leave based on actions, whether they were led to the PTPC level. You have to keep in mind, anybody can file a PTPC complaint, anybody. And so it could be the district, it could be the parent, it could be a teacher, it could be someone in the community. So it's up to the district to make the determination. And I would say, in my opinion, teachers that rise to the level of a PTPC complaint typically don't retain their jobs. But again, I don't have all that data in front of me. I know there's teachers who I work with who are on plans of improvement that when I work with them, I'm working with them because there's a desire from the principal and a desire from the educator that this is a good teacher, they just need some help. They need to figure out what's going on. And most of those teachers are in their early on years practice. Very rarely am I working with a tenured teacher when it comes to instructional improvement. And that's the idea to come alongside, not to be punitive, not to say, well, you know, you're the worst teacher ever, so we're going to get rid of you. I think teachers that leave college, they're rookies, like a police officer, and they need support, and that's where the mentoring program comes in. And I'm grateful that Anchorage School District has that. And so I think there's a lot there. There's training, there's mentoring, and then there's the teacher's own responsibility of making sure they're doing what needs to be done. So they can be retained, so they don't rise to the level of a PTPC complaint. So I think there was a lot of different answers in there, but hopefully that addressed what you were asking.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions? I want to follow up. This is Senator Hughes. I want to follow up, Maureen, with Senator Begich's question, because the performance audit did recommend not that your commission take on the duties of the teacher certification office, but there be a merging of administrative functions. So are you still thinking that would be difficult, that the administrative functions could not be combined?
Are you talking administrative, like what our director does, Jim Seitz? Is that what you're referring to? Because there's not much I can answer regarding that. I can tell you in my position, but I'm not. So if you can clarify what you mean by administrative.
I would suppose, and I don't know what the staffing is for the teacher certification office and what the staff is behind, besides the executive director and the commission, but just the admin support for just the business processes and such. Do you think there's any possibility that there could be some streamlining there and merging?
I think we've streamlined it quite a bit. We no longer have a actual secretary that works with Jim Seitz. He has someone that he gets a few hours from, but it's prior to towards the end of last year's legislative session, it was making the decision as to whether Jim was going to stay here in Anchorage or have to go to Juneau for an office down there. And so he's really he's our office of one, and there is a secretary, I believe, in Juneau that does provide support as far as arranging transportation and flights and hotels and things like that for the commissioners that need to come in to Anchorage when we have our meetings. So I don't know how much more you could streamline it when really it's Jim. And prior to that, it was Jim and Atiyah, who was his secretary, and she was part-time. And so our budget right now is funded through teacher certs.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions? All right. I'm seeing none. Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, in accordance with the Alaska Statute 3905.080, I move that the appointment of Maureen Von Wagner for the Professional Teachers Practices Commission and Karen Perdue for the University of Alaska Board of Regents be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. And this does not reflect an intent of any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions.
Thank you. And doing this a little bit upside down, but I do want to open up public testimony because I forgot to do that
And I don't see anyone online. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify for either of these appointees? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. And the appointments for Ms. Wagner and Ms. Perdue will be forwarded on to the joint session. And before we gavel out and sign the paperwork, I want to announce our next meeting will be Monday, March 20th, and we'll have confirmation hearings for Mary Hughes, for the also for the University Board of Regents, and David Piazza and Kent Runyon for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. So if members could please stay and sign the committee report, and we will adjourn at 8:50.